Calling all conscious achievers who are seeking more community and connection, I've got an invitation for you. Join me at this year's Summit of Greatness, this September 7th through 9th in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio, to unleash your true greatness. This is the one time a year that I gather the greatness community together in person for a powerful, transformative weekend. People come from all over the world, and you can expect to hear from inspiring speakers like Inky Johnson, Jaspreet Singh, Vanessa Van Edwards, Jen Sincero, and many more. You'll also be able to dance your heart out to live music, get your body moving with group workouts, and connect with others at our evening socials. So if you're ready to learn, heal, and grow alongside other incredible individuals in the greatness community, then you can learn more at lewishouse.com/summit2023. Make sure to grab your ticket, invite your friends, and I'll see you there.
I think there's something inherent in every comic where he felt like he or she felt like a little bit like an outsider looking in.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off. We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
When I was a kid, I was never a self-promotion guy.
Really?
Well, that I don't know how old you are. I'm 50.
40.
Okay. So like, there was no social media.
Uh-huh. No cell phones.
No cell phones. No one. Your worth was based on what people said. You should have seen him this weekend. Mm. Not like you, let no one sat at the table like, let me tell you what I did. If someone did that, I went to All Boys Catholic High School, you'd be like, no, you're not sitting at our table. And so it wasn't until I moved, even when Rolling Stone magazine wrote about me, I wasn't the one telling them the stories. Someone else was telling
really?
Them.
Really? Yeah, did they interview you?
No, they hung out with me. They hung out with me and I just lived my, I lived what is probably the last bastion of an authentic life, like an authentic, like just like following my id, or just going wherever I wanted to go and do whatever I wanted to do. And if we ate mushrooms, we ate mushrooms. It wasn't like it was just like you did it and you didn't tell anyone and you just ate mushrooms. And
You were promoting it everywhere.
And then I got into New York, and I watched it slowly change with the advent of social media, of people promoting themselves. And at first I thought it was gross. And then I realized it's a necessity. No one's going to sit there and tell them you're a funny comic. They should book you at your club. You need to target your fans. And I watched people I really respected do it. Hey guys, I'm coming here. Come out, support live comedy. I'm headlining. And then slowly I got into it. And then now it's like, I'm so deep in it. I had Razzle Dazzle, my special came out in March.
I had a
tour in Europe. I had to promote that, a tour in Europe. So I'm promoting through that. And then I had Razzle Dazzle come out in March. And then I had a tour in Australia for a month that I had to do. I had an arena tour throughout, in between those dates. And then I had the movie come out in a couple of weeks ago.
May.
And then now I have Fully Loaded. This starts up next week. And then I have another arena tour coming out. And I've had my fill of Bert.
One of the things that inspires me about you, many things, but one of them is how you promote yourself. Mm. I wish I could learn this art, because the stuff with The Rock and Wahlberg and all these people, you're making interesting content while promoting something that people still talk about. That is almost a skill in itself, as opposed to just watch my movie or come to my tour. You're actually doing an interesting piece of content that is funny, you know, and people talk about it. I don't know how you do that, because I wish I could figure that out.
So, probably 7 years ago, I got an offer to do the Irvine Improv for a New Year's Eve. And the Irvine Improv said, can you shoot something on Instagram to promote it? And I sat in my man cave, like, going, what? Like, what am I going to do? And I put a camera up in my corner, and I didn't understand. I didn't know what to do. And then right after that, I started following guys like Casey Neistat and this guy, Mr. Ben Brown, and this guy, Fun for Louie, and all these guys on YouTube that were like starting to blow up. And I started learning about shooting and editing, and I started getting very turned on by the concept of making your own stuff and being in control of your own media. And so I started editing a vlog. And in doing that, I learned a bunch of tricks.
Mm.
And those tricks kind of dictated to me how to promote.
Really?
And so I went from that New Year's Eve, to then by the time next year, around November, December, Tom Segura and I were in a fat shaming contest. I was posting very heavily to Instagram. I was promoting shows on Instagram. I'd taken control of my career. I'd started making posters. Like right towards November, I started making posters to promote shows and
designing everything.
Taking control of everything. And I say it to my team right now. I have a team of 13, but I say it to them. I used to do all of this. I loved when I did all of it. I loved it. There was nothing better than to shoot a promo and then get in your man cave and then edit it and then add cool music and then post it and then have like Rogan call up and go, dude, how did you do that? And you're like, you like it? And he's like, dude, what song is that? I'm like, right. Creedence Clearwater Midnight Special. And he's like, I got to listen to more CCR. And then doing a promo, I did a promo with Tom and I were doing a weight loss challenge. I did a promo. I disguise a vlog, a short minute vlog of what I was doing or taunting Tom into a promo at the end. Tom, I'm working out. We're doing two-a-days for you that didn't play football, is how we used to get, like, whatever it was. And then The Rock retweets it. And
that's,
I'm like,
crazy.
Shut up. It was so authentically me and it was my favorite time of making promos. It was my favorite, like, I was so in the pocket at that time. And mind you, I wasn't even selling like legit tickets like I am now. I was selling like 1,200 tickets a weekend. And my favorite one I ever did, they called up and they're like, yo, we added shows, Late Show Friday, Late Show Saturday. And it was like Wednesday. And I was like, well, I either go in and do radio or I can shoot a promo. And I said, girls, I need everyone outside. Leanne's like, girls are doing homework. And the girls are maybe like 10 and 8. And I go, just give me, it'll take literally 5 minutes, babe. I gave Leanne a leaf blower. I gave Isla a hose. I gave Georgia the drone. Georgia's 10. I got an American flag and a Speedo. And I just had Georgia back the drone up with Isla misting me and Leanne leaf blowing me. And then it went from like this picture of me to seeing my family doing it. and I played Ramblin' Grandma Man by Bob Seger.
Uh-huh.
I went in, I edited it, I posted it. Next morning, both shows were sold out, and I was like,
wow.
Bro. And then, I mean, then we can talk about the progression of promos, because it's such an interesting thing. My buddy's a marketing professor. He's worked at Oregon, University of Oregon, Penn State, USF, UC. He's worked all over the country. And he was at the premiere of my movie. And I said, dude, I would love to like audit a marketing class. And we'll be teaching what you're doing in a couple years.
Wow. And we're so far behind what you're doing.
It's just, we're at the forefront of it. I mean, you know, obviously the calling out for The Rock and Mark Wahlberg and Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's fun. And it gets you excited when they repost. And then Mark did his own video calling me out. And then in a great way, it's like now Mark's promoting F-45. Let me tell you something. I have a burning sensation to get into an F-45.
I want to go
to an F-45. It's like the way he said, let me get you an F-45. And he's good at the promo. You got to remember, these are the best actors in the world. When he starts doing this, let me tell you something. I know you're getting in shape for a movie because you got the fat belly. You're drinking beers. I get it. Now we got to get you some Flesh Azul. Get you an F-45. I've took Big Tony. Like, he's the best. But yeah, the whole promo thing. And then I got out over my skis where I started doing so well in promos that my team started going, well, put him in the biggest venues we can get him in because he'll sell the tickets.
Really?
Because
you were selling out these smaller arenas into a bigger arena.
So I went clubs, and then I did my theater tour.
Uh-huh. Which clubs are what, like 300, 200?
300 a night, 250 a night.
And then theaters are what?
Theaters are 1,200. Your first run of theaters is like 1,200 is the biggest you're going to do.
And you're selling these out.
And so you're going from what you do in a weekend to in one night. And then hopefully, if you're doing it right, you're doing two shows a night. Because that's how you really make the money. Wow. You don't make money on one shows in theaters. You got to sell two shows. So we go to the theater tour, and I decide to do a hip-hop dance video. And I'm a little bit of a penny pincher. And so, well, especially then, not as much now, but especially then. And so I was like, all right, so there's this girl, Dee Glazer. I liked her. My daughters and I would share her dance videos. So I DM'd her. I was like, hey, how can you teach me a hip hop dance? Because I wanted to prove to Rogan and Tom and Ari that I could dance. Mm. I don't know. It's just stupid, just boy stuff. And so I learned this hip hop dance. We shoot it. It's really good. And in doing it, we shoot it. It's good. Just shooting it's funny. We're all laughing. So then I go, do this one thing and just give me space on the left so I can run tour dates. And so we do the dance video. When a video is good when you post it and you start getting texts
within,
from other
within
comics.
Minutes.
I posted it. We were looking at a house up just south of the boulevard. I posted it and I got a text from like a really big comic. He's like, dude, dance video, amazing. And then you're like, okay. And then I posted those tour dates for that tour, and I sold the whole tour out immediately.
Holy cow.
That's pre-sale. I sold it all out in pre-sale, so they add second shows to all of them. General on-sale shows on Friday. I sell it out Friday. I sell them all out, and I'm like, yo. And then I watch my friends copy what I did.
And so, try to what? Do a dance video?
Tom Segura dropped $45,000 on a dance video and posted his videos, and his did better than mine.
Really?
And he sold his whole Australian tour out.
Come on.
And then you watch fans going, what's next? Fluffy's calling. He's like, dude, how do I get in on these? Like Joe Coy, like we're all comics are like, yo, man, can you come at me like that? Like, because Tom and I are very organic. We're best friends. We taunt each other. We try to one-up each other.
Right.
And so then the next tour comes and they're like, yo, what do you got? We're going to go bigger theaters. Let's go 3,500 seats. And so you're like, okay. So I'm just like, and they're very organic thoughts. I go, can I get a marching band?
Holy
and they're God. Like, what are you going to do with a marching band? I go, I don't know. I'll figure it out. Let them show up in my house. I'm sure we'll figure something out. They show up and I was like, what song do you guys know? And then no one knows each other. So they're like, I can play Rubber Band Man. I was like, yeah, I can play that. So then they sit around my pool. I stand around my pool. And I go back to like a standard promo for me. It was like lifting weights, going, what's up, everybody? It's your boy, Burke Kreischer, the machine. I drop the weights. I have a whistle around my neck. I go, I got a big announcement. And then the drummer comes out behind me.
Wow.
And then the marching band's out. Put it on sale. Sell out immediately. Add second shows. Sell it out immediately. Then they're like, all right, let's see how big we can go. Let's do Red Rocks. 10,000 seats. And I'm like, mother.
And when was this? How many years ago?
This is after post pandemic when things are starting to open up.
2021
probably.
Yeah. End of 2021 or something like
end
that.
End of 2021. October 2021.
So not too long ago.
No. I wasn't. By the way, the biggest I'd ever done was 3,500. The biggest I'd ever sold.
Before 2020.
But I was selling two shows.
Yeah.
I was selling two shows most of the time in these markets. Red Rocks is 10,000 and I'm struggling. I'm like posting every day.
It's not selling out yet.
I'm watching it grow by like every day. It's like 150 seats. 150 seats. 150. I'm doing the math. I'm like, okay.
Ooh, man.
I'm like 2 months out, I think. I'm about 2 months out. I'm like,
and you got 7,000 more tickets to sell or something like that.
Yeah. No, probably like 5,000. 5,000 okay. General.
Still half. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I go to shoot the movie. I shoot the movie at 3,500 seats. I rupture the tendons in my thing, lose my tricep. And they have to pull it. They have to go into surgery, pull it down. And I go, I talk to the anesthesiologist the night before. He goes, so what song do you want to listen to? And I go, CCR. And I go, why do you listen to a song going in? And he goes, dude, it's surgery. We do this to crackheads. It should be fun. Lighten up.
Right.
I'll give you a pill. You'll calm down. I'll have you count back from zero. And I go, hold on. Instead of counting back from zero, can I have my phone with me and do a promo read?
Oh my gosh.
And
it's
he's
amazing.
Like, and he's like, yeah. I go, cool. So we roll in. I start with my left arm, right? And I don't realize they put a nerve paralyzer in it. My left arm collapses. I grab the phone with my right arm and he's walking me in and I go, I mean, you can find this. You can find all of these online, but I'm like, hey, as I lay here on this steel bed about to go into surgery, thinking, worried about my life. I have one thought that I want to share with the world. I'll be at Red Rocks. And I go, oh, shit. like, Jimmy Buffett's in there the night before. I'm there the night. Then he'll be the night after. The anesthesiologist is like, Jimmy Buffett? And I was like, yeah, you want to come? He's like, yeah, good night. And he hits me. And I was like, I'll see you over there. Drop the phone. Wake up out of surgery. I look at Leanne. I go, did we get it? She goes, we got it.
You sold out?
No. Sold out. Sold out Red Rocks. Sold out Red Rocks.
Oh, my God.
Doing it again in October. We're almost sold out.
Holy cow.
Do it for a cruise. And so, like, I became a little bit of, like, I say this, obviously, aware of what it sounds like, but the joke within the comics was, like, promo king. You do great promos. Yeah. And you know, I have a festival now that I'm marketing entirely on my own. I have a cruise that I do entirely on my own. We've had a bunch of people come to my company, Birdie Bull Productions, and ask us to market things for them.
Wow.
And join up. I mean, we've had a lot of, you know, but the truth is I enjoy a good promo. Like if I can get some that's creative, funny, light, and then tries to sell some tortillas.
Is there any promo you've made that didn't hit?
That I thought would hit?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple.
Really?
Yeah, I had one that I was for the movie that was so good.
It just didn't take off. Was it the message or the hook was off? Or was it the timing when you posted it? Or you know, what are the factors to having a great promo?
Well, a little bit of nudity sells.
When you go shirtless.
Well, shirtless, and people go, and my ass will sell. I had one really good one where I go, guys, I know the algorithm, my ass sells. And I've got it, that's what I need you to hear. And so we pull out and reveal, and we had photoshopped my ass on my front, and I was totally naked. And it was, I mean, we lost it laughing when we saw it. And it just, it was like 500,000.
It didn't do it as well?
Didn't do it. And then some have done really well that you didn't expect, like, some just you don't know why they're going to do well, and all of a sudden they just take off. Like I did this one, I used to have a joke, just a silly joke to myself about being on a treadmill and being like, I was doing it to my, like, sometimes I'll work out and then my whole team will show up in the gym and we'll start my business day while I'm working out. They'll run questions by me and everything. So I was on the treadmill and I was like, what's that? And I went, oh, I accidentally hit it on Mosey. And I started moseying and they started laughing. And then I think it might've been Victoria, was like, hey, you have tickets to sell in Dallas. Can you do that in cowboy boots with a lasso and put it on? And we're like, oh, that's, yeah, smart. So we do it. And then immediately that goes viral. And you're like, not viral, but like a couple million views. And you're like, what? Wow, that's crazy. It was just a stupid, But yeah, the key is you got to turn the camera on. That's the big key. Just turn the camera on and start. Just once you turn the camera on and start, it starts, and then you'll get something.
But for people, I mean, people watching and listening, maybe in business, thinking, well, that's easy for you because you have all this self-confidence. You don't doubt yourself. You can make a fool of yourself and put it out there because that's what you do. And then you're comfortable in that. How can normal people become better marketers with promoting products, business, service, events without being, you know, one of the top comedians in the world?
Very easily. Become a fan first. Like, so think of yourself as a consumer always. I mean, this is, look, I don't know anything. I'm just telling you how I operate. I love going to concerts. Now, one of my business is live shows, but I love going to a concert. I love going to a concert and getting there early and taking my time with it. I love going to their merch booth and seeing what they got for merch, seeing what's selling at merch. Ask them what's selling at merch. Why is it? Why do you think that's selling? I love sitting before a show and thinking, what could this band have done differently to, like, the number one thing is, like, people sometimes, like, especially for Red Rocks, I posted a lot about it that first time because I wanted to sell it out. And people were like, enough with the posts. And I was like, then you're not a fan. Then if you're saying that, then you're not a fan. Because as a fan, if Wilco's coming to the Greek, they can post four times a day and I would never get bothered. I'd go, thanks for the reminder. I don't want to forget about those tickets that I have. Thank you. Post more. Hey, can I give you my personal phone number? That's what a fan
right.
would say.
Right.
So what you're getting is you're getting advice from a hater, someone who doesn't like himself and doesn't like themselves, and maybe they're jealous, maybe they're who knows why they do it, but they're not going to the show. So ignore that person right away. Ignore them entirely for the rest of your life, because that's not who's on your team. Who's on your team are the people that are showing up.
Right.
And the people that are showing up, they want to be there and they want to be reminded. Dude, you know how many people buy tickets and forget that they have tickets? I've done it. I've done it a lot.
Right.
But look at yourself as like a fan and look at like, what do I like? What do I enjoy? Like, I went to go see Steely Dan at the Hollywood Bowl and I was like, I want to wear a sweatshirt, but I don't want to wear a sweatshirt. I want to buy a sweatshirt. I want to carry out a sweatshirt. I go, I hope they sell sweatshirts. And then I went, ooh, I hope they sell sweatshirts. We're doing Fully Loaded this summer. We should have sweatshirts. And Leanne goes, it's summer, but I go, it always gets cold. And no one wants to bring a sweatshirt, but you're going to want a sweatshirt. So let's have sweatshirts. But I look at it like a fan first, and I go, what would activate me? What would get me to buy a ticket? What will, you know, a very simple thing that I noticed was like, when Instagram started doing the swipe up, it was a swipe up before it was a tap. I remember sitting with three of the biggest comics in the world, and they were making fun of me for using Instagram stories. Like, you're a grown man. What are you doing? We're like a little girl doing these stories. And I said, let me show you something. And I said, look.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
See this post right here? I go, this is promoting a show. And they're like, yeah, what is it? With a swipe up? And I go, watch this. I swiped up and I showed them
how many people clicked.
And I go, 2,500 people clicked on that link. Those are tickets sold.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden,
they're swiping.
Three cynics are on their phone the next day. Hey, I got a show. I got a show. You're going to take your finger and then go like this. But you're like, yo, activate. To be above your fans is the, I've seen guys do it. They don't like their fans. They're above them. They think they're better than them. Dude, I'm my fan. This is going to sound the dumbest thing in the world that you've ever heard any professional comedian say. I'm jealous of them that they get something they get excited to do. How fun is going to your favorite show? Like, if you're a fan of mine and you're going to your show and you like me, that's a fun thing to do. I love going to a show. I love having something to look forward to. I love to look at a month and go, ooh, Goose is coming to Red Rocks this night. Let's all go to Red Rocks. Oh, I love more than anything. I'm trying to think of exactly who we're going to see. Wilco, Goose, Widespread Panic. Widespread Panic is on tour. I love getting into my phone. I love buying the tickets. I'm in a place where I can buy all the tickets or get them comped.
Right.
I love getting my tickets. Get like a box.
Seats, figuring out where you're on.
Get six. I did it for Steely Dan. I got six tickets. I get the whole box, six tickets. And then I said, ooh, this is my night. Who do I want to invite? So I asked Leanne. She goes, oh, you got to invite. You should invite your trainer because you guys listen to Steely Dan when you work out. I go, oh, yeah. We've been listening to her all week. Ooh, her roommate is one of the biggest chefs in LA, Antonio LaFossa. I go, it's the bowl. We can cater it ourselves. I'm going to have Antonio have her restaurant catered for us. I go, oh, I love that energy. I love it. Now, there are comics that don't go see live shows. There are bands that don't go see live shows. It's befuddling to me because I'm like, that's the business we're in. Why wouldn't you love? It's like being an athlete who doesn't watch sports or being a guy who makes film who doesn't watch movies or like, I love it. And so I think the number one thing is think of yourself. If you're selling cars and you don't like cars, you might be in the wrong business. But if you're selling cars and you like cars, think about what turns you on.
Yeah.
Like what gets you to go like, oh, they got a new Porsche. It's entirely electric. Oh, I want to go check it out. Well, how can I do that with my brand?
Sure.
And so I'm a very like head against the wall kind of like meathead. Like I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but I just try to operate in like a very simple arithmetic way of how are we going to get from A to B.
Sure. It's fascinating, man. Something I'm curious about is every funny guy from high school and college, none of them are doing anything right now that I know of.
Yeah.
How did you become who you are when everyone tries to be the funny guy and be the life of the party, and then they go on and get a job that they don't like, and they're not actually doing the thing to bring joy to more people the way you've been doing it. How did you stay in, you know, this world, this arena of fun, jokes, comedy, entertainment, where most people from high school and college who are the funniest person in the room don't do that?
Very short answer is, I think, humility. I was the funny guy in college. One of the funny guys in high school, but I went to high school with really funny people. But like in college, I was probably the funniest guy in the room. There was a bunch of really funny guys. A bunch that tried to get into stand up, but
really,
yeah. Tried it, but they were like, they didn't do well, and then their ego shut them down and was like, oh, look at these nerds doing like clever. I'm funny, dude. I make you laugh. Like, I make them, they're like going like, ha, ha. I'm like, dude, I'm done with this. Like his ego.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, the funniest guys a lot of times are like the athlete who just, it's not funny. He's just the loudest, biggest, slap the guy in the back of the neck, everyone laughs because no one's, you know, like, that's the energy. And I'm not saying I wasn't that guy. I wasn't that guy, but like, I was an athlete. I was a big, I'm a regular sized dude. In college, I was a frat boy. I was like a meathead, and I'm sure a lot of my laughs were at the expense of other people at times. But when I got to New York, and there was this thing of my ego was shutting me down, of like not, like I didn't want to put myself out there, really be vulnerable and say like, I want to be funny. How do I do this? Like, can someone help me? Because I was funny. I knew I was funny, but you got to go like, I got to learn. I want to learn.
But there's an art to stand up and comedy versus a group of five buddies and telling jokes and just having people laugh at you.
Or, I mean, let's be honest, with the guys I grew up around, just calling your friend gay.
Right.
That was like, people laughing. That was the sense of humor.
Right.
Look at him. Look at this shirt. You know, like, and it doesn't translate. You got to figure out, number one, you got to find your voice. Well, number one, you got to learn the craft a little bit. You got to figure out how to write a joke and learn how to write a joke and learn how to learn stage presence, learn how to think quick on your feet. There's a lot, be comfortable on stage. There's a lot of that that goes on. And then after you get all that, you got to find your voice, and that's going to take
you
longer.
How did you find your voice? And was it different than what you were in college for those years?
So what's interesting is that I had my natural voice the very first time I got on stage.
Really?
100%. Was closer today to where I was that first time than ever in my life. What happened is I moved to New York, and comedy wasn't doing what my natural voice was. I was more of a storyteller, and New York was very set up punch, very crowd worky, very quick on your feet, very, very improv-y, but like trick improv, like you ask someone a question, but you already have the punchline, and then you could like trick people to think you came up with it on the fly. And it was like that. And so I had to learn that, and I had to learn crowd work.
Interesting.
And then I moved to LA, and I got further away from my voices. I learned real setup punch. I wish I could remember one of them. But you know what cops hate? When you touch their faces. Like, and then that was me. And then I took it on the road, and I got a little better, but I was always sort of derivative of what else you were seeing. And I think that was a lot of us comics. We're all derivative of Dane, if we're going to be very candid. Dane and Dave Attell and Mitch Hedberg were like the guys.
Right. Dane was like a god back in the day, right? I mean, I saw him a couple weeks ago at the club, and he's still just like so powerful.
He's so good.
And he can extend a story for like 15 minutes and keep you hooked.
He's so good.
There's no joke yet. It just keeps telling it and building it.
He's amazing. But I think podcasting helped me find my voice.
Really?
Yeah.
But you started in 2012, right?
I started whenever Rogan started. I started doing my podcast like a couple years after Rogan, but I started doing Rogan's podcast when he's, you know, right, the first year he was doing it.
Yeah.
And I remember going in with jokes to do his podcast the first time.
Interesting.
But
this is like 10 years ago or something, right? Or
this is
12 years ago?
It's going to be 13.
Like 11 years ago. Yeah.
And he...
You came in with jokes.
And this is my impression of Joe. Huh? Because you don't tell a joke to another comedian. You would never run. I'd never fly a joke by you. I might go like, hey, let me ask you. You heard something like this? I'll do that. But I would never like really tell you a joke as a comic.
Why not?
It just isn't. It's not. That is against the law in our business.
What are the unwritten rules in comedy?
You do not run a bit by another comic and think they're not going to catch it or smell it. Like, I remember Patrice O'Neill. Someone was doing a bit, and he goes, are you doing a bit to me right now? You think I'm going to sit and listen to a bit?
Wow.
Out in front of the club. Do it on stage. Don't do it in front of me. Gross. And I told Rogan a bit about...
On his show.
I said it, and then I watched it start to fall apart. And then I was like, you know, never mind. And he went, well, no, tell me.
Tell me the story. What happened?
No, finish it. I go, I don't think you'd like it. And he goes, tell me. Why not? Why would I like it? Joe's like my wife. Just... brutally honest, and you're like, good God, I'm so uncomfortable right now. No, tell me. Why don't think you like it? You're a fan. He goes, just tell me the thing. And then I told it to him, and he goes, I like it. Okay. And then I was like, okay, this is not jokes. This is not morning radio. This is going to be two friends talking and having a conversation. And at best, the best of two friends talking is when people go, hey, did you hear about that time Joe lit shoe? And you're like, wait, what? Or, hey, did you hear about the time I shot a pizza box or I fought a bear? Right. And that was what worked on Joe's podcast was my dad's on speed and he's been putting pregnant women's under his tongue. And he's like, wait, tell me more. And then you're like, okay. I had this weird interaction with a bellman and then I told her on Joe's story and then all of a sudden that became a bit. And then I'm like, oh. And so I started developing bits based on a real authentic conversation like I would have had in high school, like I would have had in college, like I did the first time on stage. I started having these authentic conversations. And then I got known for a little bit. I was like, hey, next time I'm on, remind me to tell you about the time I got involved with the Russian mafia. And he's like, wait, what? And I was like, I'll tell you when next time I'm on.
Ooh, that's a good promo.
And then a week later, he's like, dude, you got to come on and tell me the story. And so then that's when I found my authentic voice.
Interesting. What is your authentic voice, if you could voice it?
I think it's a little bit Florida. Like, I think there's this, like, and this is way overthinking it, but there's a little bit of the wild men that went through Florida that I have a little bit of all of them, a little bit in me. I have a little bit of meathead, a little bit of moron, a little bit of like Carl Hyacin, a little bit of Ernest Hemingway, a little bit of this weird Florida eclectic man that is the Florida man. And it's like, my stories are a little outrageous the way you would hear in Florida. Because no one just told you facts. They told you the story. They wanted you to, I mean, I remember older men when they'd tell a story and they'd have words like monstraza. And you're like, well, I don't even know what that means, but I know what you're saying. You know, like, right. Like, you know, like, our baseball coaches growing up would just tell you these stories.
Back in the day when I was playing ball and this and this.
And they were ball busters and they were men and they'd fist fight, but they drank and they chewed tobacco and they thought you were weak if you didn't chew tobacco. And like, I feel like, and then juxtapose all of that with my father, who's a very pretty straight laced Brooks Brothers wearing Democrat in a sea of Republicans.
Wow.
Very, 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 to this day, very progressive.
Huh.
To this day. If he's very humble. His mantra in life is eat cash checks.
Wow.
Instilled that into me to a fault. But I think I'm a little bit of Florida. I think I fit in Florida. I think people get my energy in Florida, you know, like, and I think that's how we grew up with the crazy and wild stories. And
sure,
you know, like I'm definitely not New York.
Right.
I'm definitely not LA.
How long you been out here now?
I've been out here like 20, I was since 2000. So
wow.
23 years.
So after college, you went to New York for a little bit?
Went to New York, got discovered by Will Smith, did the bi-coastal thing for like 2 years, like 97, 98, 99. And then 2000, booked a TV show and moved out here full time. Still did the bi-coastal thing, but never went back.
Right.
Booked a TV show and then started living out here. And I mean, it's funny. I was just telling someone the other day. Sometimes if you're like, we didn't have any civic pride in Tampa. Like, there's no, like, no one was like proud to be from Tampa. Now I am, but like when I was a kid, it was like I thought I belong in LA. Like, I really thought I belonged in California. And my first time in California, I was right where we are right now, literally right here, over the mall right there.
Yeah,
and West Mall. I was there. You know how unattractive this area is. It's very sterile.
It's getting a little better, but yeah.
I called my dad. It's 98. I call my dad and I go, oh, I'm going to live here for the rest of my life.
Really?
And I was here.
Like, in the corporate world, it wasn't even beautiful.
Wasn't even beautiful. Yet. I haven't seen the good parts yet.
Wow.
I've driven from LAX to here.
Why did you have that feeling?
The energy, the air, the temperature, the vibe. Everything, and then winter rolled in, and it got windy and cold, and I was like, but not too cold, and the mornings would be like a little brisk, but then they'd cool down.
The sun comes out.
And then when the rain showed up, everyone got excited. It's raining! And it was like, well, it rained every day in Tampa. I hated rain. But then all of a sudden, I'm out in LA, like, it's raining! And if you ever got thunder, you'd be like, how lucky are we?
Right.
I loved it. I would go out to the beach every single day. When I first moved here, I'd go out to the beach and run on the beach. I'd drive from the Hollywood Hills to the beach to do a jog and drive home. I loved LA. I still love it.
It's hard to beat it. I mean, I grew up in Ohio. great people, great, you know, all four seasons though. Super muggy in the summer, very cold in the winter. You deal with it, but it's not perfect weather like this every day.
Every day.
I know so many people have gone to Florida in the last 3 years. I can't do it there. It's so muggy.
I was just there the other day.
I have to shower three times a day just to walk outside.
I was just there the other day. And, you know, something will happen, you know, wherever you are. It's like you work out, you take a shower, and then you still sweat for a little bit. In Florida, you never stop sweating.
You're all day. You have to carry a towel.
You have to carry a towel.
Yeah.
And I remember my assistant was with me, and he's like, this is unlivable. And I go, bro, I had swamp for the first 18 years of my life. I had to wear khakis to school every single day. Yeah, it's
Florida. That's what I don't understand. People are like, it's incredible. There's no taxes, you know. You can do whatever, your freedom.
Oh, there's so many predators. You got alligators, you got lightning, hurricanes. You got sharks, you got poisonous animals, hurricanes, tornadoes show up. Florida's like, the fact that you come out of Florida makes you a strong person. I mean, look at Germany. They got no predators. They don't even have wolves.
Right.
Like, they got nothing. They got nothing. Those people are so soft. The Germans are, you know, they die in Australia like every day. Like 9 Germans die a day.
And really?
Dude. They go to Australia and they're like, dude, look at this water. It's so nice. And I'll just jump in. What's that, a big lizard? Oh, no. I wonder if I can pet him. Yeah, German. Every sign in Australia is written in English and in German.
Come on, really?
I swear to God. No predators. They got no predators. If you grow up in a world with no predators, then you just look at the, like, every, like, why would I ever check the grass for snakes? I check every day of my life. I walked into my backyard and I looked where I stepped, because when you step on a snake once, you never enjoy the grass again.
Oh, man.
Step on a snake once. I stepped on a snake one time. Stepped on a snake, and then I'm telling you, I sprinted. Gators?
Oh, no,
gators?
I couldn't do it,
We go water skiing. You fell water skiing? No one was ever like, that was fun. You were like, get me.
Wait, you can go water skiing in Florida? I didn't know you could go with this gators there.
Oh, I thought it's the water skiing capital of the world.
In the gator-infested waters?
Gator-infested waters. I was 11 and my dad's like, have fun water skiing. That is the perfect size for a gator to fit you in its mouth.
Wait a minute.
We can't do, our lightning's so bad, we can't even have giraffes at our zoo.
Are you serious?
No, that'd be serious. But imagine how scary that would be though.
Oh man, so water skiing. I didn't even know it was possible.
Oh yeah.
I thought it was like, they just made lakes and then gated it so there's no animals going.
No.
I would never go water skiing.
There's gators in every lake in Florida.
And people are skiing.
And they're 13-foot gators. There. Remember when that?
How do you get in the water?
There was a kid that got attacked in Disney.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, "Can you believe it?" I go, 100%. Yeah. Well, yeah. We never went to a lake at night. They're sitting there waiting for you with the little eyes. You never went in the lake at night, mother. No. And then our oceans, New Smyrna Beach, shark attack capital of the world. Dudes get bit on the reg.
Come on.
All the time. Shark attack capital of the world. Google aerial view of Florida beaches and then type in sharks. And you will see one fat dude from Pennsylvania sit in the water and 90 sharks around him.
Holy cow.
90? You will see, there was a dude that went kiteboarding. Kiteboarding failed. Sharks just ate him.
Come on.
Dude, that's Florida. So when you grow up in that, I think it creates a different person. A little bit of anxiety. Like, I'm hyper aware of sharks. I'm hyper aware of gators. I'm hyper aware of the weather. I'm literally... Dude, I knew dudes that got struck by lightning. I knew one dude that got struck by lightning twice.
In Florida?
In Florida.
Holy cow, man.
Dude, lightning was very real. And our parents would just drop us off on the golf course at like 10 o'clock.
The poles of the air? Just...
Yeah. And be like, you guys play 2 rounds of golf. We'll grab you at 4. And you play 1 round of golf, go in, get a root beer, get a cheeseburger. Then you come back out, play another round, and that's when the rain comes in. Anyone from Florida right now is going, it starts raining around 2 or 3. Every day it rains at 2 or 3, thunderstorms roll through. Every day in the summer, and our parents just left us out with steel rods and go in this field. Good luck. Hopefully I'll see you at 4. It was, dude, I'm trying. I wish I could work a bit out of it.
I feel like you're working one right now. This is good,
man.
It's
so true that, like, you start realizing, I was on a hike with my daughter, Isla. My daughter, Isla, says some really insightful things sometimes in her own little weird way.
How old is she?
I don't know. she's 16.
Yeah.
She's 16. And she's hyper aware of snakes and spiders, especially black widow spiders are really bad in the valley.
Oh, yeah. I just moved to Studio City.
Oh, brother. Take your Adirondacks and flip them upside down. You'll see little white balls underneath it. It's all the babies. All the black widow spider webs. That's where they put in your Adirondacks.
Oh, man.
If you have one of those Stop at Rock City little mailboxes, they're bad. So we're in Hawaii with the family. We're on a hike, and we're with this guide, and he is super casual, and Isla is everywhere. And he's very laid back. It was he got really high, and he's like, I'm not going to do the Hawaiian accent because it won't sound Hawaiian. It'll just sound racist. He's like, I don't even know what it sounds like. And he says and Isla goes, aren't you worried about snakes? And he goes, we don't have snakes in Hawaii. She goes, you don't have snakes in Hawaii? And I went, no. She goes, well, that explains everything.
When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LEWIS.
And he goes, what? And then she looks at me. She goes, I've been wondering why this guy's so relaxed. He didn't grow up with snakes. And she goes, can you imagine that, Dad? Never worrying about a snake. And then I thought, just casually, every time we play softball in our front yard and the ball rolls under the bushes and you stick your hand in there, it's that Flash Gordon moment where you're like, am I getting bit by a snake?
Right.
Like, and my whole life. And if you grow up in Hawaii and you just hands in bushes. And,
you put your whole face in there.
Face. I wonder what's back here. Hey, let's flip these rocks over.
This is hilarious, man. Here's what I'm fascinated by. You've got 3 shows. You know, you've got essentially 2 podcasts, a YouTube show. I don't know how you do those 3. You got a Netflix special right now, which is hilarious. You got the Machine movie in theaters, and you got a world tour coming up. I don't understand how you were mentioning before we started about how you aren't really doing therapy right now because every day you're talking about yourself.
Yeah.
How do you manage really staying healthy, happy, keeping up your relationships while doing so many incredible projects all at once and having to be on to promote them all and come up with great, you know, promos and hooks and just be on constantly? How do you manage it all?
Well, it's interesting. So the hardest part is that all the promotion stuff is a hat you wear. Like it's your brain is in that mode. And staying healthy is oddly enough is not, and I'm not the most healthy guy in the world, but like as I cough.
Even mental health and just, you know, relationship health. And
so I try to stay super grounded in like just how lucky I am. Like it's gonna sound super silly, but like Rob Dyrdek did this, talked about this.
I love Rob.
He talked about this, like quantifying his happiness one day.
Yep. He measures it all.
Yeah.
Every day.
I'm not that guy.
It's unbelievable.
So I draw a lot of inspiration from people that are totally not like me at all.
Like David Goggins and Rob Dyrdek.
And Cam Haines. And like, you know, I can't do half a marathon every day like Cam does. But one day I just go, I'm going a full Cam. Let's go half a marathon today. Let's just do 12 miles on the treadmill. Let's have
fun.
Rogan is a great inspiration. Jesse Itzler.
He's great.
Yeah, I just texted him with him last night. I think I'm going to do this.
Are you going to Hell in the Hill?
Yeah. No. I'm going to do the run.
29029 or the all-day running?
Whatever the one is in Georgia.
The party one. Dude, yeah. That's going to be a blast.
And so from Rob Dyrdek, I got this. I actually figured out. I'd heard of gratitude my whole life, but I figured out how to quantify gratitude.
And
I started keeping this thing called a happiness journal. I started writing down things that made me happy and then writing down things that didn't make me happy. And then going like, okay, let's identify the happy things. And then let's start doing more of those. Even if there's stuff that's out of my comfort zone, super silly, like super easy to quantify. I was like, I know making dinner for my breakfast for my daughters makes me very happy. And having breakfast with them makes me even happier. One morning, I know that. I wrote it down in my happiness journal. One morning I'm hungover. It's 7 a.m. Girls are in the kitchen and I hear them and I'm like, I'm going back to bed. And I go, hold on. I've proven that making them breakfast makes me happy. So let's just make them breakfast. I get up, I make them breakfast. We start laughing. I kind of forget that I'm hungover entirely. George's like, you want to go for a hike? And I go, I know that makes me happy. We go for a hike and then I go for a hike and I feel amazing. And I'm like, and then I started listening a little more to Rob Dyrdek and I can't apply everything he does because I'm not totally that guy.
He's very dialed in.
But I really started quantifying gratitude and trying to be grounded in gratitude and place that gratitude and understand that anything from the outside is just stuff from the outside. And as far as mental health, I stay off all social media apps. Like I don't read comments and I stay away from it. And it'll creep in at times. Like you can't help it.
Sure.
Like you'll slip in and you're like, God dang it. Like YouTube, I'm so promoting myself. I'm everywhere right now.
Mm-hmm. I can't open an app without seeing your face.
I'm everywhere, and I'm like okay. So I've been totally off of my phone entirely. I almost entirely, and my wife's pretty regular, like yo, be a dad right now. And so
she's grounded.
Yeah, and I'm very as far as like. Everything else, like I wake up every morning at probably like 6 a.m. and I work out really hard. I have a trainer that comes to my house and I work out really hard.
Not as hard as Wahlberg.
You know, no,
we got to do an F45 class then.
Dude, I'm in. I'd love to. I would love to. So when I have that hat on of promoting stuff, the problem is when you're doing stand up, you got to put on a totally different hat where all you think about is jokes all day long.
And one's a marketing hat, another one's an actually entertainer, joke, performance, full hour hat, which is a whole another skill set.
Well, it's a whole another skill set, and it's all kind of found a little bit. Like for me, my material's a little found. It's not like crafted. It's more like I stumble on something and
you roll with it.
Yeah, and then I roll with it, and that for me, I just got to book spots, and that's the hardest part as you work all day long. Last thing you want to do is go to a club and wait until midnight to go on. But like I do that, like when I go to Austin to do our podcast, I'll do Rogan's Club. And then I'm off the grid. I don't have to feel like I'm away from my kids.
How do you set yourself up to get in the pocket when you're on stage? Like if you could remember the times where you're like, man, I was just in the zone, the flow, the pocket. Was there a process for getting in there that day or that hour before or that week that allowed you to get the best possible chance? Because obviously you got the energy of the crowd, you got to deal with other situations, but for you to be in there where it's just like, man, this is, everything is landing. What does that process look like?
You can never, even on your like best day, where you're like, man, I'm firing hot all day. Wait till this happens on stage. You can still bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wait, where did that come from? And then on days where you're like, I'm not feeling it, I don't want to go to the club. And then you have like the best set of your life. The only, on the road, I have a little bit of a schedule. I like to work out around 4. I like to take a nap around 5:30. I like to wake up at like 7. I like to start drinking coffee around 7:30. I don't have coffee all day long. I like to have it right before I go on stage. That's really helpful.
Really?
Yeah, a cup of coffee is really helpful. I heard nicotine really helps too. a lot of my friends are all using nicotine before they go on stage or while they're on stage. But I'm not going to do that. But coffee right before I go on stage really helps. I have little things that I do. Like, so if I'm pretty thick in an hour, like say 16th month into, you know, an 18 month run of getting ready for an hour, I like to get drunk or high when I go on stage, like pretty lit.
Why is that?
Because it's nice to fuck up what is a very rote material, like material that you've been doing.
Oh,
this is my beginning. This is my thing.
Interesting.
It's good to be a little fucked up and be in a club, not in a theater, but be a little fucked up and screw things up because it forces you to think on the fly and it forces you to rethink things that were like it's almost like painting blind and then taking the blindfold off and going, oh, well, what is that? As some of my best bits were bits that were doing just fine. And then I tried them once drunk and they go sideways. And then I'm like, wait, I got to fix that on the fly. And then I go, wait, if I took this bit and you're thinking it's forcing you in the moment. Yeah. I like to do that. But for the most part, I really enjoy, this is going to sound not like the answer anyone wants to hear, but I like a little structure. And I don't like to be drunk on stage. I like to be sober on stage. I like to have coffee on stage. I don't mind having a drink on stage, but to go on stage drunk is never like a winning recipe for me.
Right. And how do you keep your confidence up? And how do you build the confidence, keep it up if something's not going your way on stage?
Oh, that's part of the, I don't know this. I don't know if this is fool's gold, but like that's, you kind of need things to not go right on stage to know you're going in the right direction.
Really?
Yeah, anyone who's killing every time they go on stage they're not taking enough chances.
They're not risking.
Yeah, you got to risk things, and you got to fail, and you got to fail epically at times, and you got to fail like it took me like a solid year to get the machine story to work at all.
You kept trying, and it just wasn't working.
Dude, we're talking about this is back when I toured clubs, so we're talking about six shows a weekend, working 40 weekends a year. And then at the end of that year, I kind of got it where it started working.
Because you're doing what, 10, 15 minute segments?
No, I was doing an hour.
An hour, six times a weekend.
Six times a weekend.
Holy cow.
And it wasn't for a year, it wasn't landing.
Wasn't landing.
Why do you keep doing it when you know?
Because you know it's there. You know it's there. You know it's there.
Even though it's bombing every time, or there's no laughs.
There's always something where you go, this has got, like I had a joke about Confederate statues that I'm still never told on a special, but it was a really, I knew there was something there. I didn't know what the joke was, but I knew there was something there. And it was like nine different ways of racist before it got to work. But I knew something was there. And when I finally solved it, I went, I got it. And it's a great joke. It's a great joke. And if it is anything, it's very progressive. But you got it. It's, you got to figure out the ones that, you got to just break the eggs to make the omelet. You can't just make an omelet with no shells anywhere.
Is there any joke that you've thought was there that you haven't figured out yet over the years?
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch.
And do you still feel like it could be there?
Oh, there's one I figured out last week in Austin that I've been chewing on for like 10 years.
Come on. 10 years you've been thinking about it.
10 years.
And then well, I you got try it every now and then once every couple of years.
I got it. And it would get like a smack. The statement in and of itself was working, but nothing around it was working.
Ah. The punchline was working, you mean? Or like?
No, the concept. The concept. Okay. The concept was there. I just couldn't figure out how to tell it. And it was based on a true story. And I couldn't figure out the thing. And I'd always had it. And I remember I said it to Segura one time, and he laughed hysterically. He's like, is that a bit? I was like, no, but I said it at a Chinese New Year's party, and it killed when I said it. And then I told him the story, and he goes, shut the fuck up. And he's like, are you doing that? I was like, I can't get it to work.
Because you tried it in a club.
I tried it, and it just came off. You got to find, you know, sometimes with some jokes, especially, you know, anything a little edgier, you got to find the lubricant to get it there. And you got to find the friendliness. Like, I had another joke. There's two jokes in this new hour that one I wrote probably, I mean, the child that it happened to is now has a kid. So it had to be like probably 13 years ago. 13 years ago, I had an experience with this child. And he's now an adult. He has a child. He's bigger than I am. And I had an experience with him 13 years ago. that made me giggle, and I knew the word that he used to talk to me, and then my wife one day said something about how she had dated a cousin and found out at a family reunion, and I was like, huh? And she said something that made me laugh, like what her dad said to defend it was hilarious, and then I was like, oh, if I can marry, oh, okay, I'm gonna tell these as one. So you just, you know, it's almost like keeping like really good notes about your ideas and then going back and going like, oh, that can work now, or I'm a better comic and now I can get that to work.
And
that's a lot of it is like,
you've got more reps now.
You become a better comic and you can figure this. There was a story that happened to me when I was 25 years old that was just a hilarious story. It was a simple interaction, a phone call, and that was it. I tried telling it 25 years ago, and nothing. And the other night I told it in Austin, and Mark Norman came up to me and goes, that's the best story I've ever heard you
tell. Come on.
Swear to God.
Now, is it a better story because you told a better story, or is it because you are who you are? People love you. They know you. They think it's funnier because you've got the platform and the specials and the movie, and you're just a funny guy.
I think you get more confidence on stage. I think it's exactly as funny as it was 25 years ago. It's the same story, hasn't changed at all.
It's more your energy that you bring to it.
I think it's your energy, and I think your confidence.
Mm.
Like, look, if you watch Dave Chappelle, who's the greatest at what we do, he's changed. He's grown as a comic to now he can open his show singing Prince. He opened a special quoting Prince, and you're just like, whoa, that's amazing. Whereas maybe if he did it 20 years ago, you would have been like, what are you doing?
Right.
I remember Louis saying that. You become a better comic, and then you look at bits that you couldn't get to work, and then you're like, oh, I can get that to work.
Interesting.
So is building confidence for you all about the reps, or is there other ways to build confidence, especially in the world of comedy?
I think it's about the reps. Right. I think it's about getting confident on stage. And being really comfortable on stage. I think as a young comic, I came in going like, I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be that. And then I got older and I was like, oh, I don't need to be that guy.
Mm.
I can be a guy who tells you just what his life's about and talks about his own personal experiences.
Yeah. There's some great people that do that on stage today in your mind. And I don't want you to single anyone out because I know there's lots of great comics and people just in comedy. But who are two or three that really inspire you today? Or maybe that resonate with you in a special way today?
David Tell's my favorite comic there is. David Tell's the best comic that's... I was talking to Segura about him last night, and he was like, you know, he's in Austin, and I went down, and he goes, I just went down to watch him. He was like, and I said to him, I forget how great you are. And I'm on tour with Dave on Fully Loaded, and I do it because I like watching him. His brain is so different than anyone's, and he's such a master at our craft. Chappelle's, I mean, it's hand in hand as those two. Chris Rock. Chris Rock's the reason I got into comedy.
Really?
You know, yeah, Bring the Pain. Oh, my God. And then there's a ton of other ones, you know, that are fantastic. Bill Burr's a brilliant. I mean, he's brilliant. Brilliant. I mean, legit brilliant. You know, like there's no, like, and there's a ton more. I mean, Nate Bargatze, Mark Norman, Shane Gillett. There's dudes younger than me that I go, watch out. These guys are monsters.
Wow.
Yeah. And you like, Nate Bargatze can get you to laugh about eating, like he can tell you about eating a cracker and you cry laughing.
What is the thing that you're the most proud of that maybe a lot of people wouldn't think you're that proud of, or they don't know about? Something maybe that you don't talk about too much that you're really proud of, whether you do or you've done or you haven't done.
This is so stupid. So sometimes you see something you did and you go, oh, I forgot. Like I'm pretty funny. Like, cause you forget, like you do it, you do a special or you do a movie and I did this thing called What Will the Maid Think when I was working on Travel Channel. I would leave hotel rooms.
The maid?
What will the maid think? It was a hashtag I'd use. And I'd leave hotel rooms in interesting fashions. I'll show you some on my phone and every now and then I'll see one and I'll go, I forgot that was me.
Huh.
Like that's legit funny. That's legit funny. And I would do it and I would make myself giggle And then I would laugh throughout the day about it. And I'd leave a hotel room, like, I'd leave a nice tip. But I would laugh hysterically. And so every now and then I see it and I go,
what would the maid think?
What will the maid think? And I see them and I go, so, and I forget, oh, that's me. So, like, I'm going to show, okay, this was the very first one I ever did, okay? Very simple.
Oh, my gosh.
I just put my shoes behind the curtain and left.
Holy cow.
Right? Every now and then I go, like, I'm so self-promoting so much, especially with all these projects, that every now and then I'll see something like that will show up and I'll go, sometimes I was just funny just for funny's sake.
Right.
Like, sometimes, like, some of the most brilliant things are the things that no one really knows about, but you did it for yourself.
Mm.
I look at that, and every now and then I go, I was just a funny dude, like a really
organically funny guy.
Yeah, like when I talk to my friends from college and they tell stories about me, the ones that I'm not telling everyone else, you know, like.
You're just doing it.
Yeah. Like, it was, I remember we had Theta homecoming, and we were in chapter, and so they told us the other night, they were like, do you remember when you got kicked out of chapter, out of Theta chapter? And I was like, yeah, I definitely remember. The president said, you know, we got homecoming coming up. I made a joke and everyone laughed. And he was like, hey, we're trying to get through this for real. Theta homecoming. And I made another joke. And he goes, hey, I'm being dead serious. I hear one more joke about Theta or homecoming and you're out of here. And it's quiet. And he sits down. He goes, all right, are we ready to start? And under my breath, I go, two Thetas walk into a bar. And the place. And I was like, but you forget about these, like, when you were genuinely funny. Not for a TV show, not for
social media,
not just being funny, and everyone doubled over, and it was just for that group. Those are the times where I like, when, like, people tell stories about me that I grew up with or from something, and they're like, do you remember that? And I'll be like, oh man. That's what, like, I saw that, what will the maid think? And I was like, and I did it, and I just posted it. I just would never, there was no viral thing when I was doing that. Tribal Channel hated it. And
I think you should bring that back.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. Capella University's game-changing FlexPath format helps you learn at your own pace and fit earning a degree into your life. From before you enroll to after you graduate, you'll be supported by people who are invested in your success so you can pursue your goals, knowing that help is available if you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Well, I like that. Bring that back to Instagram.
When I was good at it, I was good.
Oh man, I liked that a lot.
I was good.
That's a good.
I haven't done it in forever,
dude. You got to bring
what
that
happened
back.
Is the,
this
the,
tour.
What happened is the hotel started expecting it, so I get to my room and there'd be 30 towels, 45 pillows.
Oh wow,
a ton of toilet paper. They'd be like, "Leave us something," and then I'd be like, panicked.
Yeah. Anxiety of like, how do I outdo the last one?
And then they started doing it to me. I'd get there and my bedroom would be replaced by a whitewater rafting raft. And they'd have mannequins all over my room.
Kind of cool.
It was
good content now, though.
Yeah. Well, Caverns of the Winds, I think. Yeah, that happened.
I mean, that should be on this next tour.
Yeah.
Next tour.
Well, I live in a tour bus now.
Right.
I'd be doing it to myself.
I'm curious about, there's so many great comedians that bring laughter and joy to the world, but there must also be a dark side to comedy or to comedians. There must be pain that comedians go through, suffering, sadness, loneliness, insecurities, doubt. Can you speak about the dark side of comedy, if there is that?
I mean, look, I don't want to dictate how people think about comics, but I think there's something inherent in every comic where he or she felt like a little bit like an outsider looking in, maybe a little bit of bullying that happened.
They were bullied.
Yeah, they were bullied or they felt like an outsider. I always felt like an outsider.
Really?
Yeah, I definitely never had like industry like praise Like the industry was never, when I was young, I was never on the top 10 comics to watch. I was never given the half hour Comedy Central special when everyone got them. I kind of always had to make my own way, which I think is inherent in every comic. You feel like you have to make your own way. And I think everyone, I don't know if I have like a real sincere darkness. I don't think I do. But I know I deal with anxiety and I deal with like a little bit of OCD and I'd say depression, but not really. Like not someone who's watching now goes, I have it. And I go, I don't have that. But I was bullied, you know, a fair amount as a kid. Just regular back school then, like 1980s bullying, yeah, the kind of that happened. And, but I think every comic has a little bit of an outsider's view, I think. And that's why they're funny, is they see things a little bit differently than everyone. And you don't want your kids to go through it. You don't want any kid to go through it. But sometimes you'll see a kid going through stuff and you'll be like, that kid's going to be a great comic.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Where you're like, so wait, I remember, and it's just like, just little things that set an example on you where you're like, here's how we're dealing with life. Like, I had closing ceremonies for Little League Baseball, and I did make the All-Star team that year. I was young. I was in the young kids group. And there was an All-Star game that day, and the coaches were like, hey, we need your uniform. And I was like, huh? He was like, you can turn in your uniform. And I was like, I'm not keeping this? And he's like, no, we keep them. Turn it in. And I was like, but I don't, all I have is a Speedo on. And he was like, oh, that's what you're wearing. And so then for an entire All-Star game, I had to watch an All-Star game in a Speedo, knee-high socks, stirrups, cleats, a glove and a hat. And I was Magic Mike. And I was like...
You're like, what, 6 or 7 years old?
8. And I...
They wouldn't let you take it home, bring it back tomorrow?
I might have been 10 because I wasn't 11. 11's when I got my teeth knocked out and I was on the All-Star team that year. I was 10 years old.
How did they not let you take it home?
I just sat there and I had to watch a whole All-Star game. I sat in the toilet by myself in the bathroom at Forest Hills Baseball and I sat there just like mortified that I was like, no one else is wearing Speedos. No one else is wearing this outfit. And I'd walk around and people like, what's up with this? And I'd be like, hey, what's up? How you doing? And I think that you don't want that for your kid.
No.
But if you want your kid to be a comedian, you need to have a couple of those moments.
Do you think if comedians in general went to therapy consistently, worked on healing the traumatic events from the past, would they be funnier or would they be less funny?
No, you'd be funnier. It's stuck on you. It's stuck on you forever. I've made my therapist literally spit coffee out of his nose. And then I write it down. I'm like, I'm talking about that on stage.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's stuck on you forever. The way you see the world is different, especially when you're a comedian. Once you become a comedian, your brain shifts into a different parallel universe where everything's a joke. Everything's a joke. You're looking for the joke in just about anything. You're at a funeral and you're thinking, what's funny about this? I mean, my grandmother was dying. She was having congestive heart failure and I'd never seen my uncle or my dad cry. And they called me up and they're like, yo, grandma's dying. And I was like, okay. And then I come over to the hospital. And so I get there and both men have their heads in the curtains because they're holding back emotion. And my grandmother's laying there and she goes, Bert. I said, Grandma, how are you feeling? She goes, not good. My back hurts. And I said, well, what do you want me to do? She goes, would you rub it? And I went, yeah. And I go to rub her back and I'm looking at my dad and my uncle and they're looking at me going like, they don't have what I have that I can hold it together and give her comfort. And they're both looking at me. And then I said, Grandma, I think someone dropped a tissue behind you because I'm breaking up a tissue behind your back. And she goes, that's my skin.
Oh,
and I
no.
watch my dad and my uncle just, he's like, he's rubbing the skin off my back. And they start laughing. And then I'm laughing. And we're all three laughing our ass off. And she goes, rub it harder. And my dad's like, he's going to rub it harder. He's going to rub it harder. It was, the three of us are crying laughing.
Oh my gosh.
But even in that moment when my grandmother's dying, I remember saying, well, I'm a better comic. That'll be a bit. Like, I'm not ready for that now.
Wow.
And I'm not ready for it soon. But when I figure it out,
wow.
You know, when my dad dies or something, you know, like when, like it's gotta be, gotta Jeez. Be later.
Man, how can you tap into vulnerability though? Or is that a thing that.
Dude, I sit in vulnerability. I live in vulnerability. I put myself out there.
Sure.
So much.
But I mean, emotionally, are you able to sit in vulnerability without it being a joke at the same time?
I lay in vulnerability. I tell everyone everything about myself, every aspect of my life. I say everything on podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them everything. I tell them my wants, my wishes, what I like, what I literally everything. And I hope that people are responsible with it and gentle. Some people aren't. Some people, you know, take that as like you show a little bit of your neck and they go for it. Mm. And some people appreciate it. And they're like, yo, thanks for talking about what you're talking about. Thanks for talking about anxiety. Thanks for talking about your drinking. Thanks for talking about you and your wife's sex life. Thanks for talking about your shortcomings as a dad. Mm. I really appreciate that. Other people are like, yo, he's a dad. And he's just some alcoholic who tells the same story. You hear those and they hurt your feelings. And you go, I guess it's my fault. I've overshared. I've overshared. I've given them
ammunition.
I'm giving you ammunition to hurt me. And I have to live by that sword and die by that sword. I just know that when you do connect with someone and maybe you take someone from a place that isn't so great to like a little bit better place by being open. And I know there's comics that have done that for me on podcasts. I know that they have. Rogan has. I know that that's invaluable. And so you just hope that you're flooding the market with good and you're helping more people than you're helping. I don't know.
This is hilarious, man. I'm so glad you've been open and sharing today. You've got the Machine movie, which is out now. I want people to go watch that. That FX special is hilarious. Thank you guys. Check it out. If you want to see the sexiest man on stage shirtless, check it out. World tour coming up. You know, you got all your podcasts. We'll have everything linked up. How can we, before I get to the final two questions, how can we be of best service to you today?
I don't know. I hope you like me. And that's the saddest part is like, we talk about vulnerability. Is I just want people to like me. And so I hope you like me and I hope you enjoy this conversation or I hope you draw something from it. And I hope we made you laugh a couple times. And then if you like it, this is the rub.
Yeah.
If you liked it and you go, I wouldn't mind seeing more of that guy.
Absolutely.
Come see me live. That's what I do for a living. I do live comedy. That's my thing. I do live comedy. I'm on tour with Fully Loaded until mid-July. I'm on Tops Off World Tour from beginning of September till the end of December. I'll be touring the world again. Check out my specials and check out my movie and just see me live. That's the thing I do.
Where can they get tickets?
Go to BertBertBert.com. Go to BertBertBert.com. Three Berts, B-E-R-T, because four would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Go to BertBertBert.com. You can get tickets.
And all the tour dates are there, everything.
All the tour dates. We've got a full stacked schedule for the fall. We've got my cruise. We've got Red Rocks coming up.
Wow.
And Fully Loaded, I'm bringing 26 comics out on the road with me. We're alternating dates and having a blast. Live comedy is really important. I think people, it's going into a moment, right? It's having a moment right now.
It's huge.
And I love it. I love it. The first time I saw it live, I was blown away. And I was like, this is the most amazing thing in the world.
This question I ask everyone at the end, it's a hypothetical scenario. Imagine it's your last day on Earth many years away.
So we're giving you a heads up.
Yes.
If you do not want to see a grown man cry, turn I'm telling you, I get really emotional. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I get really emotional, especially when you think about like towards your end of life or any of these things. I'm just giving everyone a heads up, okay? Cut it off right now. Stop watching. Stop watching and go watch some base jumping video.
Oh, I got stuck on
it. I've been thinking about the end of life. Yeah. Imagine you live as long as you want.
Ooh, I love this.
You live as long as you want.
This is a great question. I'm not crying now.
And you accomplish all your dreams.
By the way, I've already accomplished a lot of dreams I didn't know I'd have.
Right. But it's the last day. Hypothetical scenario in the future. And for whatever reason, all the content you've created has to go to another place. It's not in this world anymore. It goes with you or it's erased or something, right? This conversation, all your specials, and everything you create from here to then, for whatever reason in this world, is gone. So no one has access to your content or information anymore. But you get to leave behind three final lessons, three final truths that you would share with the world before you got to turn the lights off for your own life. What would be those three truths that you would leave behind to us?
The three truths would be life goes by way faster than you think. Slow down. That's number one. There's no place in this world for hate. Mm. It doesn't serve you. Find love, find laughter, find happiness, and bathe in that. Mm. Get rid of that negative. It does not serve you.
Yeah.
And then the last one, The last one would be leave a mark. Mm. Leave a mark. Leave this world in a way that when you're gone, people think about you every now and then. I just drove by Buddy Hackett's house. It's where I blew out my tire. Mm. And I'm still thinking about Buddy Hackett. Leave a mark. Leave a mark so people think about you. Not famous, but just people miss you. And they go, God, I wish you were still around. Leave a mark. Leave a mark. Yeah. Those are the three things.
That's beautiful, man.
I want to acknowledge you, Bert, before I ask the final question, for your realness, your authenticity, for you being vulnerable and also just being an incredible storyteller and bringing joy to the world. I think you're leaving a mark in a big way. I think you're... consistency over the last two decades of showing up and being of service to people in your unique way inspires people and brings them joy when they might be feeling bullied or hate or less than or whatever it might be. So I really acknowledge you for your gifts, your craft, and how you share it with the world.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. My final question is, what's your definition of greatness?
Ooh.
Greatness is a... greatness is a silent trait. Ironic coming from me, it isn't one you have to tell people. It's something they just witness. They smell and they know. You know when you see it. You know when you see it. It's effortless. It's pure joy. And it's inspiring. And I think it's something we should all aspire to find our thing that makes us great. You don't need to be a comedian. You don't need to be a movie star. You don't need to be a rock star to acquire greatness. I grew up with a guy named Brad Racky, one of the best pitchers I've ever seen in my entire life, went on to play in the pros. He had greatness. You don't need to be that. You can just be great at being a dad. You can be great at being a PE coach. You can be great at being a baseball coach. You can be great at being a cop. You can be great at being a fireman. And you don't have to brag to anyone. It just shows up and people can sense it and they can see it and they can smell it. And then it inspires other people. And greatness is like true beauty.
Mm.
It's like the purest form of beauty. And it's so soft and it sneaks up on you. And then when you're next to it, you're just like, God, you just want to stare at greatness. I've been lucky. I've been very lucky. To see greatness hit all over the spectrum.
Mm.
I've seen the greatest comic work. I've seen the greatest dad in the world, the greatest mom. I got the greatest wife in the world. I surround myself by greatness. Hoping that it elevates me to just pretty good. But yeah, greatness is sexy, man. So sexy. Seek out that greatness and then surround yourself with greatness. It's so cool.
I hope today's episode inspired you on your journey towards greatness. Make sure to check out the show notes in the description for a rundown of today's show with all the important links. And if you want weekly exclusive bonus episodes with me, as well as ad-free listening experience, make sure to subscribe to our Greatness Plus channel on Apple Podcast. If you enjoyed this, please share it with a friend over on social media or text a friend. Leave us a review over on Apple Podcast and let me know what you learned over on our social media channels at Lewis House. I really love hearing the feedback from you, and it helps us continue to make the show better. And if you want more inspiration from our world-class guests and content to learn how to improve the quality of your life, then make sure to sign up for the Greatness Newsletter and get it delivered right to your inbox over at greatness.com/newsletter. And if no one has told you today, I want to remind you that you are loved, you are worthy, and you matter. And now it's time to go out there and do something great.